Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding, and I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are talking to Mr. Skip Robinson, and this is a name you may not have heard, but Skip was a pretty popular bodybuilder in the 1970s. He is originally from Maine, from the East Coast, and he moved out to California back in the 1970s, and he got to hang out with that Gold's Gym crew, and he trained with Arnold and Franco and Frank Zane and all those guys. So he's got some great stories. He never won the Mr. America or Universe, but he did compete in some top-level shows, and he was out in California for a while, so he lived that bodybuilding lifestyle, training with Arnold and the gang at Gold's Gym every morning, and then hanging out with him at the beach and everything. He actually looked like a California guy more than a guy from the East Coast because he had that blonde surfer hair and he had that kind of look. And he also did some photo shoots with Wayne Galash, and he shot with Casey Viator, and he got to know Arthur Jones, so we got some more Arthur Jones stories. So Skip is going to be joining us in a minute, and he's got a lot of great stories from the golden age of bodybuilding. And I want to mention right off the bat that we are sponsored by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with, and it's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So if you go to oldschoollabs.com to order their supplements, use the discount code LEGENDS12, and you will get 12% off your order. Again, that's oldschoollabs.com, Old School Labs supplements that make sense. And if you're into the keto diet, a lot of people are trying the keto diet now. It's very popular. Old School Labs is a whole brand of supplements that pertains to dieting on keto. So I am editing a lot of their articles that they're putting up on the website, and they have a lot of articles, a lot of information about that keto diet. I have not tried it myself, but a lot of people are using it. It's very popular now for losing weight, and there's a whole process and a whole philosophy behind it, so you have to do it right. All right, at the end of the interview with Skip Robinson today, I'm going to read another article, and we're going back to Muscle Builder and Power. This is another one from 1977. It's the August 1977 issue. And it's written by the man himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it's about tricep training. So where else can you hear an article about tricep training from Arnold Schwarzenegger except right here at the Bodybuilding Legends podcast? Pretty interesting because triceps were kind of a weak point for Arnold, and this really describes his philosophy on how he trained them. And he trained them obviously a little bit different than his biceps, which were a very easy-growing body part. So it's pretty interesting. So we will get to that article right after our interview with Skip Robinson. Hope you guys enjoyed that excerpt from the book Pumping Iron that I read last week. I thought that was really excellent because you really hear all these debates about bodybuilding not being a sport. And I think Charles Gaines really put it perfectly about how he described how bodybuilding is definitely a sport because it's so hard to train for. And you are training for an event. It's an athletic event. But the way the sport is supposed to be looked at is aesthetically. And I think we've lost sight of that for over the last probably three decades. And I think that's where the passion for old school bodybuilding, like what we talk about here on the podcast, comes from, because I think that the physiques have really lost that aesthetic appeal. And I think the bodybuilding federations, in response to that, have just created new divisions. So now they're looking for different things from each division. But bodybuilding used to be just about size with that aesthetic appeal, which is, I guess, very hard to judge, especially as the physiques keep getting bigger and bigger. But that's what it used to be, unfortunately, but that's not the way it is anymore. But anyways, if you haven't heard, maybe stop the podcast last week when we talked to John Arneta. Try and go back and listen to that, because I really thought Charles Gaines put it better than anyone else. I'm still working on our new series about the women bodybuilders. Unfortunately, I can't get any of them to do any interviews. I did hear, believe it or not, from Rachel McLish. I emailed her this week on Facebook, and I think Rachel knows who I am because she's commented a few times on my Facebook page. And actually, she said she was all for it. She was ready to do the interview, but she is writing a book right now, so she wants to finish the book first. So I don't know when that'll be. Hopefully, it'll be sometime this year. But I was just overjoyed to hear from Rachel McLish and to hear that she is all for it and she would love to do an interview with the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So keep your fingers crossed for that. But I haven't heard back from Tanya Knight and I haven't been able to get a hold of anyone else. A lot of these women are not on Facebook or social media. So I've got to reach out to my contacts in the industry. We did do an interview with Ruth Silverman. So I'll probably put that up in a couple of weeks. And Ruth and I just talked about the state of women's bodybuilding. She kind of got into the whole sport of bodybuilding around the mid-80s, around 1986. So she was not around at the beginning of women's bodybuilding. But Ruth wrote specifically about women's bodybuilding and figure and then bikini when all that came around. And she did that exclusively for Iron Man magazine. She started off with Flex, but she was doing that for Iron Man. So she obviously knows about all the women and she knows about, and she has a lot of opinions about how the women looked and how they should look and all that. So hopefully we'll be able to put that interview up in a couple of weeks, but she's the only one I've been able to get for this new series. All right. So that's about it. My training is going good. I just did my mass cycle. I just started it this week. So I did week number one, which is really a good week for me because the weights are not super heavy. It's a nice break from going really heavy with that power cycle. And in week one, you know, the weights are the lightest they're going to be for the next 6 weeks. So it was a really good week. I'm actually getting bigger. My waist is staying the same. I'm still kind of fat. I got too much body fat, but putting on size and my waist is staying the same, which means I'm putting on muscle. So I really don't feel like dieting. I'm supposed to be dieting for this video shoot I got coming up in the middle of July, but feeling good. I just feel like I'm in that growth cycle, you know, when you training is going good and you're eating good and you're just growing. So I'm not really sure how much I'm going to really diet over this summer, but we'll see. I got a good interview also coming up next week with John Lloyd. I'm sure a lot of you who follow Bodybuilding Today know his son, Boston Lloyd, because Boston is very outspoken. He's got a great personality and he talks a lot about steroids. So he's developed a real big reputation. He's a lot of popularity and a lot of the younger guys especially know him. But John Lloyd, his father, competed in the 1970s. And I remember John from when he competed, especially in California. He owned a couple of Gold's Gyms out there. In fact, I think they owned the very first franchise after the main Gold's Gym in Santa Monica. John trained with a lot of the great bodybuilders in that area. And he competed against like Mike Christian and Bob Paris in that Southern California area around the late 1970s, early 1980s. So John had a great interview with him and he had a lot of great stories. So you're really going to enjoy that next week when we talk to John Lloyd. All right. I also want to give a shout out to our Patreon donors. If you want to help support the Bodybuilding Legends podcast and the Bodybuilding Legends Show website, you can go to bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, there's our Patreon link. And we have some fine individuals who are donating money every month to the Patreon account: James Kerr, Mark Johnson, Robert Brown, and Scott Barron. So thank you guys again for your support. I really do appreciate it. And if anyone out there wants to join these guys and be a supporter of the site, like I said, you just go to the bodybuildinglegendsshow.com website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the Patreon link. We did get a couple emails. Actually, it was on my Facebook page. I didn't get any emails. If you want to email me about the show, just send it to naturalolympia@gmail.com. I always appreciate hearing from you guys. But I did get a couple comments on my Facebook page about the John Arneta interview last week. Michael Dusa said he was great. Richard Perillo said, awesome. I'm looking forward to listening to this podcast with John. And then after he listened to it, Richard said, great interview, gentlemen. Richard Porcelli said, Rory, great physique and awesome poser. Arnie Lamparella said, just so genetically gifted. Rory Liedlmeyer, I believe John Arneta was his training partner. They were both unbelievable. So gifted. Rory Liedlmeyer still looks phenomenal today. And John Natashak, who beat John Arneta at the 1984 Nationals, said, very cool. Larry Bernstein, another great bodybuilder from the Chicago area, said, awesome. Michael Cox said, wow, blast from the past. Tom Terwilliger, another great national-level competitor and a pro IFBB bodybuilder, said, I was so impressed with John back in the day. I thought he had one of the best middleweight physiques of all time. I remember him going head-to-head against Lee Labrada at the Nationals. It was very close. Gino Ferrero said, great physique. George Bangart said, another great interview, John. And John Torelli said, John Arneta was very special. So thank you guys for those comments. And like I said, if you want to send me any other emails, just send them to naturalolympia@gmail.com. I always enjoy hearing what you guys have to say, any comments, positive or negative. All right. Before we get to our interview with Skip Robinson, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So you can call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. And if you mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they will not only give you a free consultation, but they will also give you 20% off your order. And they also have a product called the Magic Pill. It is developed and backed by science. It's a formula that was made by chemists and expert formulators who are working with Florida Alternative Medicine. It's a revolutionary fat-burning product, and it's getting rave reviews from athletes all over the country. So if you want to order a month's supply of this amazing fat loss pill and thermogenic, the price is $39.99. You can just call Florida Alternative Medicine at 813-922-8939 and order yours. All right. So that is our opening. And here's our interview with Skip Robinson, one of the top amateur bodybuilders from Maine who moved to California and trained with the Gold's Gym crew back in the 1970s during the golden era of bodybuilding. Here you go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And my special guest this week is Mr. Skip Robinson. And Skip has had a long bodybuilding career. He was competing in the top amateur competitions in the 1970s and the 1980s. And he went all the way up until just a couple of years ago when he did a Pittsburgh Pro show in the Masters division. So, Skip, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, John, for having me on your podcast. It's an honor. Bodybuilding Legends. I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
I think that means you're old.
Yeah. Well, at least you're a legend as you're old, right?
So. Yeah, there you go. I appreciate that. I've been following you on Facebook and your podcast, and you've had some real-life legends on there, that's for sure.
Yeah, we've been going for almost 2 years now, so we've had some good guests.
Yeah, you have. You certainly have.
So, Skip, when were you born?
1944.
44, August. Okay. And what got you into lifting weights and wanting to be a bodybuilder?
I didn't want to, I'll tell you. it was kind of crazy how I got into this. But back in the day, I was teaching skydiving, and we were the Fallen Stars Sport Parachute Club. We were partying all the time. I was probably 23, 24 at the time. Weightlifting was not my priority at the time. And I was engaged to this young lady, and she went away for the weekend. And so I cheated on her, and she caught me. And I know. Tell me about it. So then I guess I figured out, what I had lost. And I tried to get back with her, and I'd go to different nightclubs and stuff like that down the beach. And she was with other guys, and that kind of bothered me. So I said, I'm going to show her. These guys kept calling me to weightlift. And like I said, I was skydiving. I didn't really want to do it. So after, thank God they were persistent. So after probably 3 or 4 weeks, I said, okay, I'll do it. And I started lifting, and one of the guys I skydived with, after about 6 months or so, we were at one of the hangouts, and he said, you look like you're getting bigger. And that's all it took, you know. I did wear a couple of sweatshirts under a jacket and stuff, and I kept peeling the stuff off as I went on in my career. But you know when the next time I saw that young lady?
When?
Never. I never saw her again.
Wow.
And I taught school, and I had some of her nieces and stuff, you know, class. So I'm sure she knew about it, and she's happily married and went off somewhere, you know. But it's kind of funny here. I was going to show her for something I did, but then again, I never saw her again. So that's how I got started. And we started training in my father's basement. There was about six. See, I was ahead of the millennials. I stayed at home till I was like 27. So we were, working out in my basement, and there were no gyms at the time around here.
Yeah. So yeah. You grew up in the Massachusetts area, right, Scoop?
Yeah, Maine.
Maine. Okay.
Yeah. Just a little further north.
Okay. What made you decide to compete?
Jeez, I went down to the Mr. Maine with a friend of mine.
Okay.
He was competing. Peter Erskine. And he had won it, and he was an Olympic lifter and all that. So on the way down, he said, why don't you enter? I said,
As you're going down there.
Yeah, as I'm going down there. Now, I entered with no shaved legs, had no food, didn't practice.
Right.
And there were five competitors, and I even think the custodian placed ahead of me. It was really a humbling experience. After that, I had the bug, and that's from then on. It was, I'll bet you in 30 years, I probably didn't blow off five training sessions. Trained twice a day, probably destroyed my body. But you know, back in the day, that's what we did. In the following year, I won. I think it took me three tries to win the state, and I won the powerlifting and back in the day in AAU, they required you to more or less powerlift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of times they'd have the contest ahead of time, and then the bodybuilder come on around 9, 10 o'clock at night, you know.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, you'd have the same judges that judge the powerlifting that would be the physique.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest break that I got up until that time, and probably I owe it to this guy more than anybody, is I entered the Mr. Boston YMCA big contest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was around 11 o'clock. I go out on stage and do my routine under the one light bulb, you know, no music.
Mm-hmm.
And I got second to Captain Bruce Lyons of the Marines. I'll never forget this.
Okay.
And I had been in the Marines too at the time, but at that time I wasn't. He was still in. And this gentleman come up to me with a camera, and he said, you ought to go out to California. And I was teaching school at the time, and I'm saying to myself, who is this guy, you know? And he said, you didn't win the contest, but he said, you have the most potential. And so he says, I'm going to send you an airplane ticket. To go to California. So I said, okay. And it was Ed Connors.
Wow. Yeah. Way back then.
And so I always thought I was his first person that he brought out to California.
Yeah.
But I was talking to him the other day, and Pete Grimkowski, he said, was.
Oh, really? So, wow.
And Pete and I were good friends, too.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So what year was that, Skip? What year was that he sent you out there?
Oh, 1936. No, I don't know. 74, probably, like that.
Okay.
73, 74.
Okay.
And I went out there, and I'm all excited. I saw the, I was under the impression, let me just digress here just a little. Ed, before I went out to California, Ed helped me go to the Mr. American Yacht, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And my first big, big contest. And I didn't know anybody there. And I go up to the door to open up to go in the auditorium. And the door swings open and the guy opens it for me. It's Steve Mihalik.
Wow.
His shoulders. He had a little tiny head, it seemed. That's all I can remember. And these massive shoulders. And I'm saying, Skip, all you got is a pair of arms. I said, this is going to be a long night, you know. So anyway, right after that, he sent me the tickets and I went out to California. And I had been looking at the magazines, and up until I saw Steve Mihalik, I thought it was trick photography. I honestly did. I'd see Larry Scott, Dave Draper, and all those guys, and I'd say, Jesus, nobody can be that big, you know?
Yeah.
And so I went out there, and I can remember in the taxi for the airport going under the sign, seeing that green sign saying Santa Monica, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was so excited about that. But I got there. And the gym was closed. I got there late.
Mm.
And so I slept in the back parking lot. The next morning, I felt this tap on the window. And I look up, and through the light, the sun's coming through. There's this guy with a bandana and long blonde hair. And I thought I was having a religious epiphany. When I Jesus, it was Dave Draper.
Right.
And, yeah, and he took me in and said, when's Arnold coming in? When's Arnold coming in, you know? Because that was around 7:30 in the morning. And Arnold come in, you know, around 8:30, 9 o'clock with Franco and those guys. And so I went right up to Arnold and introduced myself, you know, and he called me Skip. He had that. I don't know how, but anyway, I said, you got to help me pose. I was getting ready for Ed Jubenville's contest in Mountain Park. Did you ever hear of those?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyone that did anything had to go through Mountain Park if you're on the East Coast.
Oh, you know? Okay. Right.
And he was an Olympia judge, as you probably know.
Uh-huh.
And he would get Frank Zane, Franco, Arnold, all those guys to come guest pose.
Mm-hmm.
So Arnold, I knew, was coming in there. This was February vacation, and I knew he was coming in there. He was going to be the guest judge. And they were filming for Pumping Iron.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this was and, 74 around, huh?
Yeah. And they filmed me for Pumping Iron a lot. We had to all sign a waiver, you know, that we wasn't going to, if we were in the pictures and all that. It was nothing. And I had won at the Olympia. It was the Western America contest. In the very next year, they switched the name to Mr. World. And I won my class. Franklin Green, I think, won the overall. He was from Trinidad.
Yeah,
and,
I remember him.
You know, they filmed me, and it was cool. And then I found out later when I saw the movie, I was pretty much all on the cutting room floor.
Oh, man.
So there's just a couple glimpses, you know, that I can live in infamy on or whatever. But
yeah,
it was fun. You know, I enjoyed, I loved it. I do. And I still do exercise them, you know?
Yeah. And you're 75 now, right?
I'm rambling. Ask me some more questions.
So when you met Arnold, did he teach you how to pose? Oh, and what was that
like? We went upstairs, and on my Facebook page, there's a picture of in him upstairs of the original goals.
Oh, and, wow.
He shows me a side chest pose and stuff, you know, and then I do a pose, and he goes, Skip. And I go, what? He goes, are you paralyzed? I go, I go, why? He says, you're not flexing your legs. You know, that spring when he did the, I can't remember who was in the contest. It was either Mr. East Coast or Junior Mr. America. And he was the head judge. And he goes, Skip, you look beautiful. And I knew I'd won right then. And I did. So
you did. Well, yeah, I'm looking at your contest history here. I saw you did the Junior Mr. America back in 72.
Okay.
Then Pete Gronkowski won that one.
Yeah. Pete Gronkowski won it?
Yeah, so it's Pete Gronkowski won and Mihalik was second.
That's not the one I was in. I would not have been that close. Trust me. the Junior Mr. America is the one. Oh, that was IFBB. That's why.
Yeah, yeah. This was AAU. Yeah, okay. I was looking at. Yeah.
Oh God, I wish I was that good, but no.
Yeah, then you did the Junior America and the IFBB, and you won, right? You won your medium class, yeah. And Don Modzelewski won the overall.
Yeah, he just made a comment on one of my sunrise pictures on Facebook.
Oh yeah.
And, it's good to hear from those guys, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's the good thing about social media is you can still stay in touch with some of these guys.
Yeah, Don had huge arms.
Dude. Yeah, that's what I remember about him, yeah.
Yeah.
That year you did the Mr. World, too, right? Now, was that the one that was in Madison Square Garden at the Fell Forum?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, okay. That was a famous contest.
It was kind of fun because Dr. Green, who was a veterinary at Hialeah, the one in New York or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew, he was a judge, and Franklin Green won the best poser. He mm-hmm. came back and he said to me, he said, Skip, he said, they gave him the wrong name. They said, you won it.
Really? And, oh, man. Know,
but there was nothing. Franklin's a good guy. He told me he had pictures of me hanging in his garage in Trinidad or something.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. So that was... So I tell everyone I won it.
What was that contest like? Because that was the one where they had the Olympia and Arnold and, oh, yes. and Zane were in
yes.
it.
Yes, it was. I had been going out to California. I had been out there prior to that,
mm-hmm.
and it was fun. Like Frank Zane was the science teacher,
yeah,
and so wasn't I. It's a good thing he wasn't a plumber because I'd have been a plumber because I used to mimic everything he did. You know,
that's
but
funny.
When I went out there, every once in a while, I'd get on the beach with him and stuff, and he wanted me to get a job teaching out there.
Uh-huh.
And him and his wife, Christine, took me to the principal, and they also took me to Al Aorder, I think. Al Aorder, he was a shot put Olympic.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember that.
To put in a good word for me. And I didn't get the job. I come in second. But the next day, they had Proposition 3 or something like that, and all the new teachers got laid off. And I had a house back here, you know, in South Portland, Maine. So
mm-hmm.
I was lucky that I didn't get the job. And it turned out, you know, the way it should have.
So you got a chance to know a lot of those guys then from going out to California, like Zane and Arnold?
Yeah, all of them.
Wow.
I remember one time when Lou was, it was at Mountain Park, and mm-hmm. they wanted him to enter... Now, I don't know if it was a Junior Mr. America or Eastern America or not, but I can remember he'd be a dark rim glasses. He'd come to the show, and they said, come on, Lou, enter the show. And he didn't. And I told everybody that he didn't enter because he knew I was going to beat him. But I did win the show. And
then you did? Okay.
Yeah. And then the next, few months later, whatever, I was at that. I think was at the Mr. World because mm-hmm. he was in it. Him and I did a pose down and we go out on stage, and I remember Arnold and Franco and with judges and I don't know who else was. We're sitting in the off one of the rooms of Felt Forum, and I go, Lou, how's it going? And he doesn't say anything. And I'm saying, what a jerk. You know, because I had been training out there, and, you know, I talked to him and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remembered he was deaf. So me, when I was in the lineup, I was chatty. I mean, I'd talk to the people beside me and all that. So I touched his hand, and he looked down at me, and I said, hey, how you doing? Big grin on his face, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. Were you surprised at how fast Lou got up there? Because he was real young, and all of a sudden he's winning Mr. America, Mr. Universe, and he's up against Arnold in the Olympia.
Yeah, I understood about the drugs and stuff involved in genetics, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When I first started, I didn't. But then I started teaching anatomy class and weight training at the university. And I really got into the muscles and, you know, and all that stuff. And then I found out that how big genetics plays.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you, John, I don't know anyone that worked any harder. Well, I can't say that because my friend John Defenders and Mahalik and those guys, they were nuts. I power lifted. I bench pressed 450. I did a 610 deadlift, and I squatted 605 for three. And I only weighed 194 pounds.
Wow, but, no kidding.
But I knew I was in it for the long run, and I just enjoyed it. Really, really did, you know, enjoy it. Enjoyed it, I mean. I still do, not as much. But
yeah. When you were going to move out to California, was your plan to win Mr. America, Mr. Universe, and be in the magazines like those other guys?
When I went out there, Joe Weider come up to me.
Okay.
And he said, I want you to come out to Woodland Hills to my office. And Gene Mosey worked out there. Rick Wayne was the editor and all that. And I said, why? I said, what's up? I said, Joe, I go out there and I go in this, I'm sitting up in this big office, you know, and I'm looking around. I'm saying, if my friends could see me now. So anyway, he comes in and he had that. Did you ever talk to him?
No, I never met him.
Yeah. High pitched voice.
Yeah.
And I said, Joe, I said, I want to work out here. And I want to tell you about my lifeguard story too. It's because it's right with this.
But,
I said, I want to work out here. And I said, I'll work in your warehouse. Paul Walker was Mr. Europe or something. He was working in the warehouse. And somebody else was. And he goes, no, Skip. He said, you lose too much weight. He says, I want you bigger, you know. So I said, okay. So in comes Robbie Robinson. And I can't remember if he was with his wife or not.
Okay.
But anyway, he said, why don't you two get an apartment together, you know? And he said, and he laughed, and you couldn't say it now, but I think he said, we could advertise you guys as Salt and Pepper or something, I don't know, like that. And Robbie says, I can't, I'm married, you know?
Yeah.
So I was only going out there on vacations. But anyway, he signed me to a contract, $100 a month, all free supplements. So I stayed out there. That was, I think, 74, 75. And because I remember Gold's Gym, Joe Gold sold it to Ken Sprague, and he moved it up to Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
But let me digress just a second. I want to be a lifeguard. I used to go to the beach, love the beach, okay?
Okay.
And I've got every basal cell to prove it, okay? So anyway, the guy said, he says, you got to swim. And I said, yeah, I know. So I said, I worked at this youth correctional center and they had a swimming pool. He said, every day go in and increase it by one lap. So I said, okay. So I jump in the pool, make it about 1.5 laps. I said, holy cow, how am I going to do this? You know, but I did. And then eventually when you learn to relax on blah, blah, blah. So I knew in April, the water up here was going to be cold.
Yeah.
And it was going to be in a lake. So what do? Fill my bathtub up with ice water. And laid in that as long as I could. And then that February, I go out and Weider signed me to a contract, and that was the end of my lifeguard days. So.
Now, were you teaching school back then, Skip? At that time?
Yeah. I started in 72 teaching.
Okay.
And,
but you weren't able to do that out in California, huh?
No, no. You're not, as it, well, then, so Weider says to me, he says, get your Screen Actors Guild card.
Okay. You said, yep. Yeah.
So I don't know what Mr. America was. I did. You got it there. It was IFBB one anyway. I won Best Poser, but I went out there. It was at the Shrine Auditorium, and Russ Werner was one of his top photographers. And his 18 or 19-year-old daughter was with him. And when I walked out, she says, he looks like Paul Newman. And, you know, and he come out back, and he said, Skip, he said, I told you, he says, go get your acting thing. But I never did, obviously.
Yeah.
it's kind of fun to, trust me, I did the right choice.
Yeah.
Being a school teacher up here was what I was meant to do.
So what was it like out in California when you were living out there, when you had the contract with Weider and stuff? What was that like?
Well, I was staying with Ed Connors.
Okay.
So Ed had this little tiny white Porsche that I used to be able to drive and stuff. And, I mean, all I got paid to work out, go to the beach, and work out.
Mm-hmm.
So
most everyone back then trained at like 9 o'clock in the morning, then 4 or 5 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Cal Skellick was there. Franco and I had a bench press contest one time.
Really?
And, yeah. I want to say it was probably 325 pounds. You know, it could have been a little more. I don't know. But I went first, in which is a disadvantage. I don't know. 12, 15 times, I think. Okay. I don't know. And he did one or two more than me. But with Franco, you know, it's his home turf. Let him win.
Yeah, right. The guys used to do that all the time back then, right? They used to challenge each other and have little contests and bet each other $5 or whatever, right?
I remember doing squats with Ken Waller, Denny Gable, Arnold. We were sitting all around, and I think I was sitting on a milk crate or something. It was I can remember this to the day, and Arnold had hurt his knee.
Against
Boston somewhere. I don't know if it was Austria. I don't know where it was, but he did anyway.
Yeah.
And Ken Waller was crawling around on the floor saying, because I went up to, I think 505 or something like that. And Kenny went to 475 or something. He was crawling. He said, "God damn you, I'm going to beat you the next time you come here," or something. it was a tight knit, not click. No, it was, you know, if you went out there and, you know, there were very, the only woman I saw train out there in the beginning on Pacific Avenue was Lyle Alzado, brought his girlfriend, a wife in, and he was training her.
Wow. So, Alzado was training way back then, huh?
Yeah. And wow. I went back and he knew a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. So I got to, you know, talk, you know, with him, and you become friendly. But I was running the gym at the University of Southern Maine.
Okay.
And it was all guys. And I went back, and the ladies, they had this little Massey gym, like, which champion did they make a gym? You know, one of those multi-stationed gyms.
Oh, yeah, Marcy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so they'd walk by, and I go, "Come in here, try this." And they matriculated in. And, you know, they would have without me. I realize this, but I exacerbated it.
What was it like training with Arnold? I mean, a lot of our listeners, we can only imagine that.
Arnold was always good to me. I'll tell you a great story. And here I'm from Maine going out there. I mean, you know, this was, I mean, this was, so I'm getting ready to leave. And it was a Saturday, and he goes, "Skip." And I go, "What?" And he said, he patted the bench beside him. It was red vinyl. I'll never forget. So I go over and sit down, and he says, "You have a beautiful upper body," but he says, "Train your legs."
Yeah.
So obviously I did. It was hard for me. You know, I was a good power lifter, but it was hard for me to get defined legs. And I got caught up on, you know, trying to get bigger, bigger, bigger. And I should have stayed like Frank Zane and just stayed, you know, light. But I didn't have the genetics. I have a wide waist. I have narrow shoulders.
Mm.
And, you know, I have no, if somebody had come up to me when I was 21, 22, something like that, and said, "You're going to be a fairly successful bodybuilder," they could have said, "You're going to be a flutist in the symphony orchestra," because that was my chance. I mean, it was so far off the realm of,
couldn't even imagine.
Yeah. But it's, you know, do you want to hear some Arthur Jones stories?
Sure. Sure. I didn't know you knew Arthur Jones too.
Oh yeah. I get a call, and it's from, Wayne Galash.
Okay.
And do you know who Wayne is?
Oh, yeah. Wayne's a friend of mine. Yeah. We've had him on the show many times.
tell him that you talked to me.
Okay.
But,
he did a film with you, didn't he? Didn't he do one of his films with you? Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. Yeah.
So that day he just came into the gym. He says, wondering $200. I said, sure. And we went down, you know, to he was somewhere in Venice, down there, up in the rocks, and mm-hmm. we did it. But he said, I had no idea who he was, and he contacts me. He said, told me who he was, and he said, I'm going to send you a plane ticket. It was like July, hot as hell. He says to come down to Daytona.
Okay.
So I get down there. I can't remember if he picked me up or whatever it was, but we go to DeLand, Florida, where Arthur was.
Right.
So Dick Butkus was there, and him and Arthur Jones were real good good friends. So I guess Dick was training at the time down there.
Wow.
And Casey was there.
Now, what year was this, Skip?
Oh, I have no idea. Mid-70s.
Okay.
It was probably, say, on the, I don't know. But anyway, I get, we go to DeLand, and they introduced me to Arthur and stuff. And then we had Lindy Johnson with us, a Miss World.
Yeah, I remember her.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah. She's still alive?
I don't know. I don't know.
Wayne doesn't know either. No one's heard from her. But anyway, he took us down, Wayne took us down the beach, and it was beautiful. You know, I took pictures down there, Lindy and I. And Wayne doesn't remember this, but I do. Casey brought a full-length mirror. He wanted to see himself in the mirror to make sure the pose was
right.
good and all that, you know. And he said to me, he said, now, Skip, he says, you and I, we can't go near Lindy. He said, Wayne brought her down here. So we said, okay. But anyway, we went into this warehouse, and Arthur Jones was trying to breed the biggest alligator.
Mm.
And there, I don't know how many alligators there were in there, but he said, I want you to go throw some chickens in to feed them. So when I went up there, he started shaking the ladder.
Oh, shit.
Now, Wayne claims it was him that did it. That Wayne went up on the ladder and they shook it. But it was one of us anyway.
Right.
Then we went over to Wayne's son's house, and he was trying to develop this or produce this snake, a rattlesnake, that was the most poisonous.
Jeez.
So we, you know, Arthur Jones was eccentric.
Yeah.
Everywhere we went, he'd be, and he loved McDonald's. He'd write on the napkins, you know, and he was always thinking. But we go in there, and Casey walks behind me, and I had shorts on, and his pant leg or something hit the back of my leg, and oh my God, I jumped because it was pitch dark. They turn the lights on, and there's 50 aquarium tanks with rattlesnakes in them.
Oh my God.
And, oh yeah, and they're just looking at you, and you can hear them do the, you know, thing.
Oh,
so here's a little guy from Maine down.
Oh, man.
There's so many. You know,
he was crazy, wasn't he? Arthur Jones, he was nuts.
Yeah, he was. And Lindy was down there. She wanted to be in Playboy.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Casey, I don't know where he went, but Wayne says, I got to go out to a peach orchard and take some pictures of Lindy. Want to come along? I said, sure. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
She didn't make Playboy, but she did get in high society, I think, or something.
Oh, really? Yeah, I remember. She was a beautiful lady.
Yeah. We were, I had hurt my back posing down on the beach. My back at the time was bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm there with this Casey and me and her. And I'm saying, geez, my back is killing me. She says, well, why don't you do this? And then she whispered in my ear all kinds of pornographic thoughts.
So really?
She says, does that help? I says, more than you know.
And you said you got to meet Cal, huh? Cal Scalak, he was always a favorite of mine.
Yeah. Never got to that too close. to him. Mm-hmm. He was kind of, I don't know if he was standoffish.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, maybe I should have made more. Now I'd have gone right up to him and, you know, but he was impressive. Tim Belknap, you remember him?
Sure, yeah. He's from Illinois. I'm from Illinois, so I remember seeing him here.
Is he still alive?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, good. I'll bet he's happy. who is it that, who owned Muscle Mag?
Robert Kennedy.
No, okay, the other one. He was a photographer. John Bailey.
Oh, John Bailey, okay.
Yeah, so he takes me over to his place to do some photography, and he just got this Quadra sound sound system. And he had a barber chair in the middle of the room. And he says, go sit in that and listen to this, you know? So I did, and then he says, he was looking at some proofs of me, and then he said, look at Tim Belknap, you know? And I did, and then went back to the gym to work out that night, and I said, Tim, you look great. Who showed you my pictures? He is going, I says, man, you look good. He says, oh, thank you. Remember, always tell them they look good.
Right. Yeah, Tim was a little hard to get along with back then. He was a little cocky.
Yeah, he's another one that I didn't get too close with.
Yeah. So I'm looking at your contest history here, Skip, and you were competing. You're still competing in the 80s then, too. So you were living back in Maine at this point, right?
Yeah, I entered the Mr. World in Phoenix.
Okay.
I have done, that must have been an AAU. It was an AAU one. It was in 86.
Yeah.
And I think Samir guest post. Samir has come up here with Chris Aceto a few times, and I got Chris started on the exercise.
Oh, you did? Wow, that's
oh yeah. He went out to California, and he went to Gold's, and he was down to his last $20.
Uh-huh.
And he walked outside in the parking lot, and I told Ed that Chris was out there, and Ed went up to him and says, "Hey, Chris," and he says, "What do you do?" And he said, "Well, I just got my degree in nutrition." He said, "How about working here?" He said, "I'll give you an office right next to mine." He says, "That's your parking spot."
Holy shit. Unbelievable. Yeah.
So anyway, that's, you know, that's, what did you ask me just before that? If I what?
You were talking about the Mr. World contest in 86.
Yeah. I went out there and.
Samir was guest posing, I guess.
Yeah. And I probably would have won that hands down. But a friend of mine was there, Glenn Nurr.
Yeah, I know Glenn, too, from Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah. And he won it. And when I look at the pictures, I can see why he beat me.
Yeah, Glenn looked good that day, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did. He said, we're friends on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah.
And, we keep him, Joe Means, John Defenders, and we all, Mike Quinn, we all keep in touch.
Oh, great. Awesome.
Yeah, it's what's that?
You also did the Junior America in 85, and you got beat by Chuck Sano. He's a friend of mine from Chicago, too.
Yes, yeah, that's who it was. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, did I come in second or win my class? I can't remember.
Chuck got first, and you got second. That was in the medium class. Yeah.
He was better that day.
Mm-hmm. How old were you then, Skip?
85. No, I don't know.
you had to be in your 40s, right? About 40 years old?
In 1985, in Detroit, I won my class in the Masters America. That was IFBB.
Okay.
And I was 43, I think, at that time.
Okay. All right.
I'm trying to. Tony Pandolfo beat me.
Oh, yeah. I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah.
That Junior America that Chuck beat, I remember Chuck was young at that time. He had to be early 20s.
Yeah. I won a lot of my classes.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I was a kid and I used to read Muscle Builder, I used to see in all those IFBB contests. And to me, you always looked like a California guy. You know, you had the hair, the blonde hair, and you had that California look. So I always assumed you were from California. I was surprised when I could hear you were from Maine.
I don't imagine Portland, Maine. It was, It was fun. It went by too fast, though. I remember being down the beach with Lou Ferrigno, Arnold Schwarzenegger, got Franco and Frank Zane. We didn't have phones back then to take pictures Mm-mm. and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd say, boy, if my friends could see me now, you know. But I said, that's going to last forever. Hello.
Yeah. You guys would just go to the beach and hang out, huh?
Yeah. That's all we do and pick up women. But anyway, other than that, it was...
Everybody would always dream to hang out with those legends. That would be amazing.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. So back then, when you were in California, like you said, you'd go to the gym twice a day. So you guys would work out in the morning, hang out at the beach then, right? And then come back at night and work out again.
Because it never rained.
Yeah.
You know, and the most it would be smoggy or whatever, you know, but... It didn't. All I had to do was every Monday go out and give a story to Rick Wayne. He'd tape it on how I built my arms or what did I do for my chest, something like that. You know,
right? And what was California like back then? Because it had to be so much better and not as crowded. The beach had to be great.
You know, it was, but I haven't been out there for so long.
Yeah.
It's not like it is now, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Santa Monica was good. I can remember meeting Joe Gold, and he had that, was it 5-year non-compete clause or something?
Yeah, where you couldn't open up a gym again.
Yeah, and he went up the street and opened up Worlds. And I can remember going in, it was upstairs. And when I went up, he was downstairs out on Pacific Avenue, whatever it was that went by there. And he had a big box of Worlds Gym t-shirts. He said, Skip, look at this. And I looked at it, and it was, you know, the gorilla frontwards. And then the back was the gorilla. You could see the gorilla's ass. And he was... He thought that was so, you know, so funny. But it's pretty cool that, you know, he started Gold's and Worlds Gym both.
Yeah. Now, did you go to Worlds or did you go to Gold's in Santa Monica?
I went to all of them. One of the last times I went up, I was training with Denny Gable. He was my training partner. And we went to Worlds. And I remember Lou used to come in. He used to bitch about have to have all that makeup on with... doing the Hulk.
Oh yeah.
Do you know who used to be a stunt double?
Manny Perry, right?
Yeah, Manny's a friend of mine.
Yeah, we had him on the show before. Yeah.
I just did a program for a lady, a rugby player today.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm going to text Manny and say, I wish I had your son with me here today. No.
Yeah, Manny's still in the business. He's still in the motion picture business. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's even getting into directing a little bit. He was doing the stunt work for a long time, but I think he's starting to get into directing.
Yeah. Well, he's been in a long, long time. First time I saw him at Mountain Park, he had a big turban on his head. Mm-hmm. I don't know what religion he was at the time or whatever, but I'll never forget that. But don't mention that because I have no idea. You know,
right.
It might not even have been him for all I know. But
you still stay in touch with Lou Ferrigno?
No,
no.
I don't. Okay. The last time I was on the Governor's Council of Fitness and Sports here in the state, I did that for about 5-10 years. I don't know. It was 3 administrations, and they had Arnold up here when he went around to all the different. States when he was on the president's council, and that's the last time I talked to him, and that was like 99 or something like that. I used to have all their phone numbers and stuff, but you know, you don't want to be that guy, you know, to call, you know, if you run across them, you know that's fine. But Arnold's a hard guy to get near because he has so many people around him, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's a whole different scene now.
Have you found it that way with him?
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to get him on the show, but it's probably an impossible dream, you know? But that's cool that you got to hang around with those guys when they were in their peak, you know, and everybody was young and you guys were all at the top of your game and you got to be their friend and just hang out with them, right?
it's when I saw Lou Arnold walk out in the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. Because I also entered in the Felt Forum, too. So,
yeah.
But it was either one. It isn't going to make any difference. But the flash bulbs, when they went off, the place just lit right up.
Yeah, yeah.
I was standing right there with him as he was walking up the steps to go out on the stage.
Oh, really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. And I saw Frank Zane. He had his little white terry cloth bathrobe on, and his calves were diamonds.
No shit.
Little tiny ankles.
Yeah.
But he was just perfect.
Yeah.
You know?
That picture of Arnold walking up the stairs, you were right there then, right? That's the one in 74 when he was going to Olympia. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow. I would have loved to have seen him in that show because that was his best ever.
Like I said, I thought it was going to last forever. Did you get the picture I sent? Did you get the picture I sent you?
The one just now? Yeah, when you're sitting outside?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you'd get a kick out of it. We haven't had any sun up here.
Oh, really?
So, no, it's been a cool, damp spring.
Mm, yeah.
So,
I listen to Chris. Where are you? I'm in Tampa, Florida now.
How's the weather down there?
Hot. 90s. Yeah, real hot.
Bring some up here. Have you ever been up here?
No, I never have.
They call it vacation land for a reason, you know?
I listen to Chris Aceto every week on Dave Palumbo's show, and he's been saying how cold it's been out there and miserable weather, yeah.
Chris is a good guy. I was supposed to meet him and Ed Connors out to the Arnold Classic.
Mm-hmm.
And something come up. I ended up, I can't even remember why I didn't go. But
now, are you still in the fitness world, Skip? Are you still helping people with programs and stuff?
Yeah, in 2006, I retired from teaching school after 34 years.
Wow, and, 34 years.
Yeah. And then in 1986, I started my own personal training business called mm-hmm. Smart Body.
Okay.
Since 86, I've been doing that as a second job. And then when I retired, if it was a Thursday or Friday, that Monday I went right to the gym and just started it. And right now I only work in the morning. In the wintertime, I'll work Saturday mornings, but in the summer, because our seasons, believe it or not, John, someone just went by on water skis. And I'm telling you, it's in
they're
the
gonna be freezing
right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, I got certified for training kids all the way up through professional athletes. And I used to be the strength coach for the Maine Mariners, which was the, not Triple A, what do you call it? For the Philadelphia Flyers.
Okay.
They had Broad Street Bullies and stuff, you know. But I couldn't keep doing it because I was teaching school and I didn't want to give it up and leave here, you know.
Yeah. Do you write programs up or is it personal training or what?
Yeah, it's my wife does the nutrition. We both have a degree in nutrition, but
okay.
I set programs up, you know, for everybody. Anyone that can walk through that door, I'm certified to train. So I've got a nice niche. It's a fitness factory. It's a great gym. It's the best one, you know, here in Maine. It's large, and Chris Aceto, every once in a while, we'll bring somebody up and have me look at them and stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
On their posing and stuff. And it's just, I still enjoy doing it. I do help some bodybuilders, but I knew at an early age, you're better to train the regular person, you know, if you want to make a livelihood out of it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've gone on my Facebook page or not, but it shows me training, you know, people. What I usually do is I have videos for training people, and then I work for a guy that owns a Howell's indoor range and gun shop, and I do videos, you know, shooting different weapons that he that he'll supply me with, and it's advertising for him. Mm-hmm. And then I do nutrition stuff, and I also do morning sunrises from my front porch. And I can't tell you, 4 years I've been taking pictures of the sunrise off my front porch, and the people love them.
Oh, really? That's cool.
I know. So I love photography. I think it's because being around Ed Connors, Wayne Galash, and in the bodybuilding, pick an eye for it, you know?
Right, right. Now, what do you think of the sport nowadays, Skip? Do you keep it up with it at all, the way it's changed? No.
When I say no, I'm trying to help John Calcione.
Mm-hmm.
I just interviewed him. IFBPA up here. And,
okay.
We just had the Mr. and Miss Maine Northeast America, which was, I think we ended up with like 25, 30 competitors, which was not bad for the first show. And one of the awards was a nice etched plaque of the Skip Robinson Crowd Appreciation Award.
Oh, I did see that on Facebook. I saw that.
Yeah. And it was kind of fun, you know, to do it. But I was just talking to the two promoters today, and we're getting ready for the next one we're going to have is in April. But it gave me a chance to see Wayne D'Amelio. I hadn't seen him. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I won his first contest. And he told me this a couple weeks ago that once again, I won my either weight class or height class. Bill Mitchell won.
Okay. Yeah. I remember Bill Mitchell. Yeah.
I still train, you know, obviously not like I did. I try to do 30, 35, 40 minutes of walking most every day on the treadmill.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a lab, a puppy that I can take for a walk. And weight training, I might do 5 or 6 exercises for, say, my biceps or triceps. And I try to do like a circuit. I don't rest. I just go from one machine because I'm, you know, I have the run of the gym. I'm there. So I'll either do a circuit or I'll do a circuit of body parts or whatever I, you know, feel like doing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm 5'8". I keep my weight around 190, which is a little heavy.
Yeah.
But, you know, the older you get, the thinner you get, the older you look. So.
Mm-hmm. Trying to keep some weight on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you competed just 3 years ago, right? 2016? Is that right?
No. No?
Okay. Okay. The guy in this muscle memory must be another Skip Robinson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe that guy won the whole my last contest was in Virginia.
Okay.
No, North Carolina. It was the Masters America.
Masters in, America. Okay.
Yeah, I got second place.
What year was that, Skip?
96 or 97.
Okay.
I think it was 96.
Okay.
But I was happy about that because my new wife at the time, she went down, and I could hear her cheering in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And at that night, I went out, and I didn't hear her. And you know how you've competed enough to know you can hear people that you know.
Yeah.
And so I go out back, and someone said, "Your wife is out back. Out in the back door." So mm-hmm. I go out and I said, "Hey, how do you?" And people were standing around talking. "You look good, Skip, you do." And she looked at me kind of funny. She congratulated like that. And I looked at her, I says, "You didn't see it, did you?" And she goes, "No, what happened was the class before me, she thought was my class. And when they didn't name me in the top five, she knew I was going to be really upset, so she ran out back to find me." And they she said, "Where is Skip?" I said, "He's up on stage getting his award."
Oh, man.
We had such a good laugh, you know, about that. So,
right. Yeah. Well, at least she was going out to console you.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Skip, but it's been great to hear about your career.
I appreciate you, asking me to do this.
Yeah. Well, if you can think of any more great old stories, we'll have you back on so you can share them with us, because I know I love those old stories.
You know, when you think of it after I get off, I say, why didn't I say that?
Right.
But no, I appreciate it. Was it too windy out here or anything?
No, I couldn't hear it at all. No.
Yeah, because I'm out here on the deck enjoying the last bit of sunshine. So
yeah, that picture you sent me looked nice. Right by the water, it looked great.
Yeah, we're lucky. We're living right on the water.
Yeah, it's good to hear you're doing so good, and it's good to hear you're healthy and happy, and things are going good for you, Skip. Like I said, I remember reading about you when I was younger and seeing in the Muscle Builder magazine, so it's great to finally meet you and hear your stories.
Well, thank you, John, for having me on. And I'll tell you, life is good. Just another big day in paradise up here.
Right. Just goes by fast, right?
Thank you so much.
All right, Skip. Take care. Thanks for meeting. Okay. Great meeting you. All right.
You too. Thanks.
Take care. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks to our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs, for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Podcast. And thanks again to our Patreon donors. If you want to be a Patreon donor, just go to the Bodybuilding Legends Show website, and it is in the upper right-hand corner. All right, so here is our article of the week, and this comes from the August 1977 issue of Muscle Builder and Power. And well, it's actually told by Arnold Schwarzenegger to Rick Wayne, and the title of the article is called "There's Less to Building Triceps Than Meets the Eye." So Rick begins, "There was a time when Arnold Schwarzenegger and Franco Colombo were like peas in a pod. I mean, they were that close. Soul twins, so to speak. I remember the autumn of 1969. The two had been living in Santa Monica a little over 24 months and beginning to dominate the bodybuilding world with a little help from their friend, Joe Weider. I was in New York, pretty full of myself, I have to admit, ready to do damage to Franco's ambitions in that year's IFBB Mr. Universe contest. The event was staged at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, which muscle fans might recall was at one time the Carnegie Hall of Bodybuilding. Of course, thanks to indiscriminate oil slicks, we would be forced to move on to other theaters, but that's another story. Yes, the Mr. Universe contest of 1969. I remember Arnold calling me aside shortly before the prejudging and wondering aloud about my, quote, return to competition, unquote. I had told him a year or so earlier in London that I was through with physique competition, that I wanted more time for other pursuits. I changed my mind, I blurted out behind the shock of his question. This one will definitely be my last. We were now in one of the Academy's dressing rooms. What shape are you in? He inquired. Pretty good, I replied, confident beneath my 210 pounds. Are you cut? I think so. Let's see your abs. I showed him. He displayed no indication that I had impressed him to any great degree. Instead, he pulled off his shirt and proceeded to devastate my self-confidence. First, he squeezed himself ever so deliberately into the most muscular pose. Then he swung himself into that three-quarter back shot that has become his personal domain, and from there into the side chest pose that never fails to bring out nervous beads of sweat through the pores of those who dare stand up against him in competition. And then he hit the double bicep shot. I will never forget those Arnold Schwarzenegger arms. The biceps spoke their own easily understood language. The muscles of his upper arm seemed to squirm and tense and stretch and contract. Yes, a symphony of incredible muscle action. I stood there transfixed. But Arnold was far from satisfied. Suddenly, he moved sideways and let me see his triceps. Enough was enough. Not only were they thick and of much sought-after horseshoe shape, heck, there were striations across them. And all this time, I believed the story that Arnold was pretty weak in the tricep area. The 1969 Mr. Universe marks the first and only time I lost out to the battle for best arms. Me and my world-famous triceps, we bit the dust at the Austrian size 11s. The whole point of Arnold's uncalled-for display became obvious much later. He had decided he wanted the IFBB Mr. Universe title of the remembered year for himself. He had also chosen Franco as the winner of the short class division, and for some reason it seemed to him I might interfere with Franco's day. Erroneously, Arnold had been informed that I would be competing in Franco's division. In fact, I competed in the medium height class, and this little episode in the dressing room was really quite unnecessary. But it completely psyched me out. so much that I almost lost to Serge Jacobs of Belgium. The whole thing came back the other day as I cornered bodybuilding's busiest ambassador for an interview regarding the training of his amazing triceps. The biggest mistake among bodybuilders, he said, is this thing about using a lot of weight for their exercises. They use too much weight, and consequently a whole lot of other muscles are forced to come into play, negating much of the desired effect. For example, in doing a tricep press down on the lat machine, many guys pack on so much weight that they're forced to depend on the pectorals, the front deltoids, the abdominals, the intercostals, and the triceps, which means the effectiveness is split up too many ways. The triceps get just about 10% of the benefit of the exercise that is essentially a great tricep movement. The best idea, of course, is to select a much lighter exercise poundage, but also make it harder for the triceps. In fact, it's a good idea to step away from the machine a little so that you cannot use your body weight in getting the bar down. That way, you isolate the triceps effect. The same principle applies to the lying French press. A lot of guys let the weight come over their heads, but as the weight is returned to the starting position, it's pressed from just over the chest. Of course, the weight should be slowly lowered to a point just above the eyes, and from there, pressed to arm's length, a straight line. Keep the tension only on the triceps. Naturally, if you use a weight that's too heavy, you'll be forced to do something which looks like a bench press. You must not take the cheek principle too far. Each exercise is designed to work a specific muscle in a particular way. Don't get too much help from other muscle groups if the idea is to work the triceps. If there's one thing I learned over the last few years of training, it's that nothing beats the Weider isolation training technique in building fabulous triceps. Tricep exercises must be isolated to work all three muscle heads properly. Consequently, you must know which exercises best affect each head. I picked something up from Vince Gironda early in my bodybuilding career, just to discover which exercise had the greatest effect on a particular body part. Vince would choose this exercise, and he would perform 20 sets of that, 20 reps per set. He would do nothing else for that body area. The next day, judging from where he experienced the greatest muscle soreness, he got his answer. In other words, let us say Vince chose the lat machine press down. The next day, he would know whether that exercise affected the outer or inner head of the tricep, and whether, in fact, its greatest influence was in the lower section of the tricep. That way, a guy knows, when he does a particular tricep movement, exactly what it's supposed to be doing. I mean, it's silly doing a tricep movement not knowing precisely which part of the triceps you're hitting. Obviously, if your upper triceps require greater development, you can't hope to correct the area by performing movements that are designed to build the lower section. Then there are the different variations of an exercise. For example, the French tricep press can be done while lying on a bench, standing, or sitting. The advantage of doing the French press sitting or standing, says Arnold, is that your triceps are stretched from the start. You lower all the way, like in the calf raise, from all the way up to all the way down, and so on. Also, doing the tricep movement from overhead, especially when you use the easy curl bar, restricts cheating. Sergio Oliva always did the French press seated. He said it took unnecessary strain off his back, and I agree. If you lean against a support, there's even less scope for cheating. How does Arnold work his triceps? I used to have different principles. Sometimes I do my triceps on the Weider supersets fashion with the biceps. Other times I've done the triceps first, followed by bicep work. Then again, I followed a system first advocated by Reg Park. That is, I would work my triceps after my deltoids because on the whole, they go well together. Perhaps because the exercises involved are mainly pressing actions, and I would train my biceps following my lat work because both groups involve pulling movements. You see, there are so many different opinions regarding bodybuilding. You have to experiment and discover which system suits you best. It's all well and good reading what a champion has to say, but you should always be prepared to put some work into discovering what methods suit your particular circumstances best. Such things as structure and comfort have to be considered when planning your routine. You might find yourself changing your ideas every 6 months or so. I know that was the case with me. I believe in using a wide variety of exercises so as to attain maximum all-around development of each muscle group. Normally, I choose 4 tricep exercises, and I stick with them for as long as a year. I perform them in sets of 5 or 6. I always work my triceps harder than my biceps, in view of the fact that there is more to work on in the triceps. 3 heads for a start, while there's just 2 sections with the bicep. I did more repetitions in my tricep routine than all the others. I guess I have a favorite tricep routine, but remember what I said earlier, that I never stick too long with any particular routine. Usually I started things going with tricep pushdowns on a lat machine. I would do 20 reps per set, as I say, performing the exercise as strictly as possible. I like to use a curved bar here. The upward and downward phases of this exercise should be formed with deep concentration. At the end of my 20 reps, I quickly performed 5 or 6 half movements known as burns. I either took it from the top to halfway or from halfway to the lockout position, depending on which section of the tricep I wanted to develop most. The first style bombs the upper section and the latter the other. With seated French presses, I did 5 sets of 12 repetitions. Remember not to cheat too much. I start at the top, arms outstretched, knuckles towards my face. The weight is slowly lowered and as far down as possible, and without stopping, return to the starting position in one smooth movement. Next, I did one-arm dumbbell stretches. From the top position, the weight is lowered all the way down to the back of the neck, and again, return to the starting position. Try to keep the elbow as close to the face as possible. 12 repetitions will do great things for the tricep. The last movement is done between parallel bars. You dip with the bars behind you, unlike the style adopted when dipping for chest development. The legs are propped up on a chair or bench. Sometimes I put a barbell plate on my thighs to increase resistance. It's a good finishing off movement. I would do 10 reps with the weight, then I let the plates drop and continue for another 20 reps. Let me tell you, here's a great tricep builder. I asked Arnold about the equipment he employed in his tricep training. He said, "I've always stayed away from all those sophisticated pieces of equipment you hear so much about. Sometimes I use long pulleys, but that's about it." He said a number of people perform their French presses and dumbbell presses with a reverse grip, that is, with the knuckles facing forward, but I don't. It's too uncomfortable, and anyway, there's no reason to believe that grip is more effective than the conventional fashion. To hear Arnold Schwarzenegger talk of bodybuilding, you get the impression that too many people make too big a thing about bodybuilding. As the champ says, you must be an instinctive trainer. Joe pounded this into my head very early in my career. You have to experiment. Find out what's best for you and stay with it. Don't be afraid to use as many exercises as you know. You'll end up with a good overall development. That's the way I did it. Increase training poundages whenever possible, but don't burst blood vessels pushing heavy, heavy weights that you cannot control. Try to get a minimum of 10 reps each tricep movement and concentrate strongly on the action of each exercise. I still can't get over the man's tricep development, and to think he makes the whole thing sound so easy. It's enough to make a guy think he's been trying too hard, doesn't it? All right, that's a great article by Rick Wayne about Arnold Schwarzenegger's tricep development. It's great to read these articles about training because you never get that anymore. We don't have magazines anymore, and people just don't talk about training as much anymore. So it was really cool hearing the great king of bodybuilding, Arnold Schwarzenegger, talk about how he developed his triceps. All right. Well, that's it for another week of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I hope you guys have a good week. We'll be back next week with an interview with John Lloyd to talk more about the great 1970s and 1980s bodybuilding in California. Thanks again to our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode. Have a great week, everybody. See you then. Take care.